Welcome to the 5th. Not the Revenge of the 6th. That's tomorrow.
Given the amount of chili I've scoffed today, I think that's also known as Montezuma's Revenge, isn't it?
I thought that was the water.
You were thinking of Johnny Cash.
A Boy Named Sue.
No, he means the Ring of Fire.
No, I'm sure you're mistaken. That's around the Pacific.
It can't be that bad. Just make sure you stay downwind.
And on that rather spicy note, it's time, I think, in a second, for some headlines. And I've lost my first bong. This is a good start.
Seamless.
Look under the desk.
Seamless.
There we go. Hang on, I'm going to do that one again. It's so good. I'm going to do that one again. Here we go. The reports of its demise have been somewhat exaggerated.
What goes up?
Who knows what you might hear?
Is this change to the digestion too much to swallow?
The correct order of things is made perfectly clear.
Hackswing bring us the latest news from the Thargoid frontline.
Weave Adam in Avic.
In any event, it's the community news with a double bong.
With double bongs, yes.
Seamless.
Totally, totally seamless. There was shock this week in the galactic community as a patient that had been subjected to extended analysis, speculation as to their health, most of which was related to whether there were degrees of dead, referring back to Miracle Max's invention of the concept of mostly dead, and of course invasive autopsy, as well as publication of possibly the highest number of obituaries ever recorded for a single entity. Upon which point the patient sat up, looked around, stretched and said in a rather confused voice,
"I'm not dead, you know."
We are, of course, referring to the Pilots Federation itself, which went into a short hibernation last week, but has reappeared, rejuvenated, re-energised and ready to rock and roll across the galaxy once again. This one-week equivalent of a political power nap appears to have been brought on not by the speculated passing into the netherworld of the PF itself, but the entire team taking a week-long game night with their little painted miniatures and getting so obsessed with their dice and tape measure combo, they had little time to keep an eye on what the rest of us were up to in the meantime. Hand in hand with their stretch and their yawn on awakening from their nap, they promptly declared that anyone with thumbs could now also have feet. What's more, the feet, minus shoes of course, were free. And not only that, they could keep their thumbs and not have to choose between the two. The nail varnish used on the thumbs could also be used on the feet, which made many people happy. Of course, those choosing feet did have to ensure they actually had legs on which to put the feet, as feet don't work when grafted to your arse. Some people objected to the cost of legs, saying that they had little time to dedicate to finding a decent pair of pins. There was also something to do with windows. If you're confused, then here's the not confusing version of this article. Yes, if your shipboard systems are run by corporations such as Sony and Microsoft, you can change them to ones run by Microsoft, the other bit, using a large photocopier, which understandably is great at photocopying banknotes from the Bank of Zeons and 3D printing ships for you, but it's really rubbish at photocopying fleet carriers as they're way too big to fit on the plate. Unless you're Jaguarius, but he just chopped his up into little pieces first, which is awesome, as Team Hotbox can now run up a subdivision called Team Notbox and come and join the Apology Officer, referred to by some as Splitter. So I'm glad that's all been cleared up. A number of well-known galactic doomsayers burned their sandwich boards and placards in disgust as they'd just spent a week preparing more doom and had to throw it all in the bin.
A minor incident was declared over at the Orbital yesterday after rehearsals by a visiting performance of Return to the Forbidden Planet were overheard by station personnel who took the clear instruction to reverse polarity, quite literally, and unfortunately flipped the switch that sent everyone shooting towards the ceiling. This incident is normally reserved for one-off environmental system accidents, as seen in the latest video from the Borg pit, where a number of commanders were sent shooting into the ether by mag boots that appear to have gone into reverse, keeping them well away from any firm surface to stand on. Deadweight GF has been regularly seen flying around the interior of fleet carriers during outings of the Hutton School of Ninj. Floor mopping guy, ably assisted by a roll of gaffer tape and spare mops 6 to 11, managed to create the kind of contraption that's normally reserved for removing spider webs from the upper corners of stairwells, and of course his trusty Succomatic 400R. The floating commanders were finally removed from their unexpected gravitationally challenged low altitude flight paths, some with a few more bruises than others. And the station control room now has a big safety cover over the polarity switch. Commanders are asked to be continually aware of the potential for solar storms from Proxima to mess with the physics a bit, and you could feel a little light on your feet all of a sudden. Please grab the nearest firmly attached piece of scenery and hold on tight in case your feet decide to go the full Mary Poppins. It is not recommended to use climbing safety tethers in these kinds of situations, as you'll end up looking like a helium-filled party balloon tethered to the nearest gantry, and if there's a power glitch in your suit systems, you'll end up flailing around like a high-pressure hose with no one attached to the business end. Which would end up with you getting red on you. And that's why it's busy studying the notes from Article 1 to work out what the situation dead equals alive and kicking means and whether it involves zombies or not.
One of the less well-explained items in Wednesday's announcement by the Pilots Federation was something called Key Feature Overhaul. Now, here at Hutton, as you know, we're not given to wild speculation, but it has got us thinking. What kind of features could be overhauled and how? Now, one option might be that all of the Power Play portraits are to be repainted by the great-great-great-grandson of Picasso. A cubist picture of Hudson, for example, would allow you to see both sides of both of his faces at once. And we can't wait to see what Aisling Duval would look like. Having said that, we think that's not so likely, given the cost of commissioning a painter. But we do think it's entirely possible that a Mr. Potato Head Holo Me may be launched upon the galaxy, allowing you to overhaul your character's features as you like. Maybe put one of the eyes on the back of your head so that you can at last see who's sneaking up onto you, given that the technology required to create a rear-view mirror was so inexplicably lost sometime in the last 1,000 years. Juancaire is looking forward to getting the extra big moustache. Flossie's looking for a pan accessory. And Harry's hoping to find an add-on to stop his being gender-neutral. Other options for the key feature overhaul are keys. Yes, it's been a long bit of worry that on disembarking our ships, we don't seem very good at locking the doors after ourselves. Then again, a key feature could refer to the colour key used in ships, and maybe the feature is a digital colouring box that lets us change everything to a vivid shade of pink. Or taupe. Or khaki. Can you have khaki light? How about puce? Or powder puff blue?
The Bank of Zeons, who also appear to run all the stock markets in the galaxy, have confirmed that 3 trillion shares in Brewer Corporation were sold last week by Zach Rackham, galactic billionaire, philanthropist, eccentric oddball, and owner of just about everything related to social media in the galaxy. As to what he is doing with these newfound trillions of credits is open to speculation, but we can exclusively reveal that he has bought a significant share in the Galnet News Digest broadcast outlet. He has turned down a position on the board, mainly as Wotherspoon and Beetlejuice were already sitting on it, and it is a rather short plank, but there are suggestions that he sees the potential for expansion of the GND network into new areas. He's said to be an enormous fan of the irreverent style and has been known to sit over at Rackham's Peak guffawing with laughter over Beetlejuice's outtakes and cursing whenever the Hutton Orbital radio team chopped them off at the end of the segments. As a fan of independent media, and with such outlets as the Galactic Forums, Galtwit, Galtube and Glitch already in his stable, there are concerns that Essien Zach, as his detractors call him, would have too much power over the media that people read on their tablets. Commander Wotherspoon has been at pains to remind everyone that the independence of the Galnet News Digest is very dear to his heart, and of course, he would never dream of being biased towards anyone except the person with the largest wallet and benefiting from extreme largesse. Anchorwoman Beetlejuice is said to have gone a little starry-eyed when counting the zeros on her bonus check and has placed an order for all of the gold, golden, goldish, and shiny paint jobs for her classic Cobra, plus a new set of paintbrushes. She has also considered starting her own broadcast channel with the proceeds and is thinking of naming it Easel Does It, which we think is quite nifty. Various governments have summoned Essien Zach to their offices concerned about the takeover and are investigating the independence of the media, something both the Federation and Empire detest, and whether the wrong kind of independence provides an existential threat to their own part of the galaxy. But there is no news at this stage whether the Galnet Rares Digest will also be seeing a windfall of this size, but Amelia Hawke was too busy living her usual dangerous life to be able to look into it properly.
We have an incoming message from one Dead Meat GF, nearly full-time resident of the Naughty Step. Message reads as follows. After discovering that I'm not the most adept pilot at subterfuge, I had to resort to murderizing inhabitants of settlements in order to keep my missions covert. I mean, if no one's alive, they can't raise an alarm, right? But these things come with a price. Not just the bounty on my head, but the nightmares were really starting to get to me. They were worse than the ones after I had to share a room with Hanky at ECM. So, I've been relaxing, taking courier missions, being ferried around by courteous Apex pilots, delivering packages to mostly grateful recipients, or collecting them, of course. Nothing illegal either, because I need to get my notoriety down to zero so I can pay the fines. But this story isn't about me. It's about what I heard and how it made the nightmares worse. I was idly listening to the comms chatter, Apex pilots not being the chattiest of companions, and happened upon some Hutton pilots discussing their mission. It all seemed fairly normal and interesting. Who was in whose ship, where they were, times of arrival, making sure they all got to their goal together, that sort of thing. The first had made planetfall and had located the objective, while the others were en route and giving their distance when I realized that this was a kill mission. It was, however, a kill mission with a difference. Not content with getting in, getting the job done, and getting out, they were toying with their prey, like a cat toys with a half-dead mouse. And then came the point where I was chilled to the bone. Don't you dare kill them before I get there! It was Flossie. The quietly spoken, kindly favourite of the Pilots Federation was not simply on a kill mission. She was demanding, in the strongest of terms and in a tone I'd never heard, not even when dealing out the strongest of pannings, that she would be the one to kill the target. I can't bring myself to tell of the consequences to her teammates that she described should they not allow her to do the dastardly deed, but I can assure you I have not slept a wink since. Message ends.
Incoming encrypted transmission. Decrypting. Decryption complete.
Stand by for a message from Haxcom Actual.
Okay, Haxwing. We've got stations needing evac and goids that need repelling. Starting with the goids, our top defensive priorities are HIP-38225, currently with a marginal presence, Paukuman, with a moderate presence, and Didio, with a massive presence. Keep an eye on Thargoid.watch for current status updates. Isherwood Station in Novus is damaged and needs to evacuate all non-essential personnel. Remember to pack up with economy passenger cabins and heat sinks for evacuation runs. It's an Imperial station, so if you've been trying to up your imp cred for a fancy ship, now's your chance. Once Sosong and Didio systems are cleared of Thargoids, Operation Idol will be ready to haul repair supplies to Jabanikov Station and Laumer Orbital, so keep an eye on Operation Ida for more details. Let's not return to the dark days and let Tharg smear a skid mark of damaged stations across the bubble again. Let's get out there and win those conflict zones. And if you don't think it's a danger to Hutton, consider that Sosong is only 72 light years from Alpha Centauri and 65 to Avik. They are close and we need to push them back. Watch each other's backs, keep your eyes on the signal sources, and always be ready to defend the mug.
Hexcom message complete. Defend the mug.
Encrypted transmission complete.
Another week gone, another Avik War 1. A couple of minor system issues. More on those stories coming up. Back to its usual spot at the bottom of the Hutton systems table is Barnard Star. There are no other faction conflicts at the moment, so now is a great time to go in there and jack up some influence. Joining Barnard Star on 33% is Ross 671, where a civil war is tying up a small amount of influence but still making it worthwhile to boost the system. Kill logo being painted on the side of Bruce Prospect. Once again, for the fourth time in recent weeks, Sirius, the insidious galactic megacorporation, has had its arse beautifully gip-raffed and express-delivered right into its own hands by the combat pilots of Hutton. Joining Avik on 39% is LP525-39, which is somewhat of a surprise as this system is normally out of control, expanding like a mad expanding thing. We suspect that a third party is working against Sutton, so in many ways they are doing us a favour by reining it in. But let's not overdo it, shall we? The second and third place factions have just gone into an election, so let's keep an eye on it early next week. The two Epsilons, Indy and Eridani, have finally hauled themselves above the 40% mark. We have an infrastructure failure in two systems, Wolf 359 and PSPF-LF2. These have been going on for most of the week, so let's get these cleared by shipping in water purifiers and power generators. At the overachieving end of the Hutton systems table, we have seven systems above 60%, one of which is over 70. Priorities this week are, if you want to truck something, clear the infrastructure failures in Wolf 359 and PSPF-LF2 and boost influence in Barnard Star and Ross 671. If you want to shoot something, save your ammo. There'll be no doubt another war bimbling along soon in Avik.
It's the Community Events Digest now, where we get reports from people taking part in events and letting us know what they're all about and how they're getting on. This week it's Trip Omega. Does the sun still rise in the east? Explore the Core Infernal Expedition. the Lost Souls Expedition 3. More Buckyballs than you can shake an exploded SRV at. And the return of the €5 tours. Links will as always be posted in Twitch chat and also in the description of the YouTube upload. Trip Omega is idling at the moment, but they're not idle. Commander Radium's getting excited about what comes next.
The fourth phase of Titan Contractor's Trip Omega expedition is just around the corner, expected to commence on the 7th, this Saturday. Starting from Colonia, this comparatively short phase will take us across 11,000 plus light years all the way to Sagittarius A. Differing from our other phases, phases 4 and 5 are considered exploration phases, with the route stopping at specific points on the journey to allow our commanders a chance to explore by themselves. Phase 4 will commence on the 7th of May and end on the 11th, whereas Phase 5, which encompasses our return journey, visiting numerous nebulas along the way, will start on the 14th of May and end much later on the 5th of June. Commanders who don't wish to participate in either phases but are in Colonia with us are advised to join our Discord for more information on the direct return option that we're providing from Colonia to the bubble. Check out our links below to see our website, follow us on Twitter at TconFeed, or join our Discord to interact with our community. Fly safe.
Commander the Presence has returned to bring us up to date with his expedition, and apparently, like all kids, once he's learned a new word, he can't wait to show it off. So here's the news of Does the Sun Still Rise in the East, Week 9.
07, Commander the Presence here in day 63 of the expedition. I'm currently ahead of schedule, but not by much, and almost at waypoint 10, the delightfully named Fana's Wasteland. Heading across Dryman's Point sector was initially exciting as I hadn't seen a notable stellar phenomena until now, and here, they're as common as the ones in the Colonia region. The only issue I've had is that the 20 or so I've found all contain the same variant of peduncle seed and seed pod. On the plus side, I now have a peduncle plant cutting on my dashboard and a sample from a pod in my cargo hold. Didn't even know they could be sampled. Apparently the word peduncle comes from the Latin word for foot, and that must be the explanation for the funky parmesan-like smell in my cockpit now. I just hope I'm nose blind by Magellan's Star, as it really does assault the nostrils when removing one's helmet after a parkour. Anyhow, I can't wait to get back to civilization and plant them. Who knows, perhaps they have amazing medicinal qualities, like Gamastrain Onion Head. Maybe that nice Mr. Delane and his chums from the Kumo crew would be interested in starting another franchise. Got to make it back first though, as I had a conga ale spillage in my cargo hold. I couldn't bear to jettison it, so I got a little squiffy cleaning it up. This was great until a bit of a rough landing and a clout from an asteroid that ignored my right of way. Ship still has 36% hull, so need to lay off the ale until the next carrier. Just hoping my next post is from there and not back at Kojira. Until next time, 07.
Commander Infernal Moose is feeling pleased, but a bit wistful, as the end of the event is in sight, and he sends his heartfelt message. This is the last full week of our amazing journey to the core and back on the Explore the Core Infernal Expedition, and it was once filled again with some spectacular destinations. We've now travelled over 90,000 light years on the scan will soon be over, with only about 13,000 light years ahead of us as we complete our expedition on Saturday in Gebel. All commanders reporting their data have flown a combined total of over 3.5 million light years, however, and jumped over 32,000 times so far. In addition, a total of 22 exploration elites were achieved by our commanders to date. Our first stop this week was Chromium Gigantum, a system with multiple pairs of gas giants orbiting extremely close to each other, allowing for stunning views from the carrier bar and observation deck. After a couple of days of exploration here, we departed for the Shiner, a system with the largest known rings in the galaxy, located 2,500 light-years above the galactic plane. While exploring around China, Commander Kami found a planet with a thin water atmosphere with lots of interesting and valuable life. These planets also usually have deep canyons, which make excellent locations for canyon racing, which of course we did. We held both stock Viper and unlimited class racing here. Once again, the unlimited class racing proved to be quite deadly, as speed does not translate easily to manoeuvrability. Our next destination was 6,300 light years down through the galactic plane to the deepest system we visited on our journey. Tryer-Flyer AA-A-H1 is almost 3,800 light years below the galactic plane and is only accessible via fleet carrier, as the nearest system is over 400 light years away. The system itself is quite remarkable, as it has two black holes which are visible from the surface of the atmospheric planets, as well as a neutron star with the entire galaxy laid out above it. After a short stop, we proceeded on our journey to meet up with Commander Chukat Wom, who had been gathering occupied escape pods for our team of Vista Genomics scientists to experiment on. The Kingfisher Nebula was our next stop. This deep blue and purple planetary nebula has a beautiful backdrop to the many stars and landable planets it hosts. The expedition is now at Sky Motion, a system similar to the famous World of Death, where a landable planet enters the exclusion zone of a white dwarf and gets very toasty in the process. Once again, our expedition astrophysicist, Commander Solandri, had calculated the exact time the planet would be outside the exclusion zone for the crew to land. While at this stop, Captain Mark Harlock held one of his famous ELW hunts, with the prize being the first scan. As this is the last full week of the expedition, and with only one stop before the completion of our expedition, a big thank you goes out to all who made this expedition possible and all who helped make it amazing. We've made some amazing discoveries, held some spectacular events, and made lots of friends along the way. 07 to all. The Lost Souls Expedition 3, organised by the Fatherhood, is mixing introspection and resurrection, as Commander Von Krieke confesses.
The Fatherhood's Lost Souls Expedition continues into the black with long stretches of quiet solitude, punctuated by alternating moments of amazement and intense fear. Commander Jakob Lightbringer shared one of these moments of amazement. One single neutron star, his only means of returning back home, shines against a virtually starless void above, juxtaposed against the cloudy Milky Way in the distance below. Others were not so lucky. Commander Dolan Lornaki finally managed to instance correctly with his teammates on his 10th attempt, only to realise his attempts had become progressively more aggressive over time and shot straight into the ground. Commander Matt Skywalker similarly descended happily towards the sunset on a majestic ring planet, only to be plunged into darkness around the same time he realised the gravity was on the high side. A fellow traveller attempted to assess the wreckage for survivors, but noted that it was difficult to take an incident report from a pancake. In the end, it was another successful week of camaraderie and discoveries. Commander Conigarino sums up our collective feelings nicely. After a frustrating search for a planet's elusive life forms, at the end of which you're close to giving up, only to stumble across this view. The best sights in the galaxy are usually discovered by accident.
After last week's video reel of nothing but explosions, Alec Turner's back on his feet and the centre details of the next race in the series.
Here we go again. Race number 4 in the Magic 8 Ball Championship starts this Saturday, 7th of May, and runs until the following Sunday, 15th of May. This one is a reboot of On the Rocks, courtesy of Psyket, and involves taking buckyball beer mats from our home in the Fullerene C60 system to 5 asteroid bases in and around the bubble, and then returning with water. After the frantic action of things like Back to Perico, this one gets into the logistics of longer-distance speedrunning, especially in the regulation Cobra, but attempts to balance the dominance of the usual unlimited-class long-range ships with time adjustment based on jump range. Could this be the moment for corvettes to finally shine as something more than just crazy diamonds? Probably not. Full details can be found in one of the prettiest forum threads the Buckyball Racing Club has ever seen.
We're not taking bets on who's going to be in the leaderboards, but if they don't include Shea Blackwood, Skur, Captain MD and Busky, with Alec Turner almost certainly in fifth place, I'll eat my pumpkin space helmet. Our friend Commander Hunter is back with details of a new expedition that is starting in 3 weeks, so you've still got enough time to join.
5 Euro Tours returns with yet another glorious trip. We're returning to Colonia and Sagittarius A-Star with the return of the journey to the center of the Milky Way. This time, our route will be much larger than the one last year. And of course, this trip is the old school way, which means no fleet carriers involved. This trip is set for 12 weeks, starting May 26th, ending August 20th, but of course, you may enjoy the trip at your own pace, be it in a week or 4 months, the choice is yours. So grab your camera, dust off that explorer outfit, and polish that ship, because you'll be out there for a while.
If any of these sound like your cup of Void Extract coffee, then follow the links for more information, and if you know of an event that we've missed, then please email itookpart@tuddenorbital.com and let us know.